garbage day.
Hey.
Again, I mean, it once a week, but so it's not.
Garbage day.
Hello and welcome to the best of Dare Daniel podcast, the creme de la Dare Daniel podcast. Of course, we are rerunning some of our most beloved, our most popular, most downloaded, most listened to episodes in the long and storied history of our podcast. It does date back to the 1790s. Mm-hmm. There's a whole thing. I won't go into it now, but it's nearly as old as this great country that we're in right now.
You've seen the wood carvings. States.
You've seen the wood carvings. Yeah. Don't tell me you haven't.
Poor Daniel's Almanac.
Of course, I am film critic Daniel Barnes. With me, as always, comedy legend, married man.
What up?
Corky McDonald. So, Corky, what do we got for the nice people this week? What do we got this week?
Ooh,
one of our most popular episodes of all time.
It's a Christmas movie. It's a Halloween movie. It's a slasher movie. It's a movie that's funny for kids. It's a movie funny for adults. It was one of the first, like, I want to talk about this movie on this podcast because of when I saw it as a kid and being blown away, like being the only one in the room who understood how truly awful it was, but so good at the same time. We're talking
truly amazing.
Silent Night, Deadly Night, Part 2,
which features a little over a half hour of footage from Part 1.
Yeah.
I mean, what is this? That's entertainment? Fuck you.
Right.
Like, best of hits. Yeah. The whole first half of this movie is mostly scenes from the first Silent Night, Deadly Night, cut in with some new footage to make it seem like flashbacks.
Narrated from a character who could not have been there for any of these moments.
Truly, truly amazing stuff. Silent Night, Deadly Night, Part 2. One of my favorite movies that I've watched. I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
This was like the most fun. I mean, if you want to talk like all these kind of different, you know, I talked about it in the Fateful Findings intro about there's different kinds of bad movies, good, bad, 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 unwatchable, bad, watchable, bad, auteur bad, which was Fateful Finding. This is good, bad.
This is good,
like,
bad.
This is really, like, this is one of the funniest films we've ever reviewed. And like,
yeah,
it's the victim of itself, but it's like the circumstances under which this was made where they just said, take this movie that we have and basically just recut it to make a new movie. It's pretty fascinating how they ended up going about that.
No, and what's great to me, sorry to cut you off. What's great to me is like Silent Night, Deadly Night was a low budget, sleazy, drive-in, tawdry slasher movie, but that was actually kind of good. It was like, it was like a good. This was the logical, inevitable, just had to be successor to that, where they rip it off and then put in the most insane bananas performance I've seen almost my entire life in a movie.
Truly.
And it has that tawdriness, but it's like, this is just bad, but married to the parts that it brings in from the other movie, it makes it the good bad that you're talking about.
It really is. Yeah, it's just, it's crazy. On their own, the new scenes that they shot are just so, so poorly made. Like, they're really poorly made. But within the context of what has happened before, they achieve some kind of, like, a sort of weirdly, like, profound and brilliant kind of a nature. And you mentioned it, the central performance by Eric Freeman is, it's just something else. It's in that Travolta range of like, wow, like this movie's bad, but he is just going, like, he, like, don't tell that to Travolta, because he is just going all the way. The pedal, there is a goddamn cement brick on the gas pedal, okay, and it ain't coming off. It's fucking super glued on. We're just going straight, whatever the fuck. It is balls out completely committed, completely should be committed, absolutely, absolutely insane performance by Eric Freeman.
And who is an imposing physical presence of a man. He's a big man. He's attractive. Yeah. And while he delivers his lines, his eyebrows move independently of each other like a ventriloquist dummy. It is amazing. I've never seen anything like it. He has eyebrows akimbo. That's it. His eyebrows just flare out, you know, windshield wiper back and forth. It is unique and captivating.
It really is. It really is. I mean, I actually would recommend that if you are into kind of bad movies that you actually check this one out. But right. I think it might be too bad for a lot of people. So I'm glad that we have such a thorough review of it to share with everyone. Corky, when you think of this movie, I'm going to challenge you here.
Sure. Okay.
Because when you think of this movie, of course, what do you think of? Garbage Day. That's a whole meme. Yeah. That's a whole thing, right? And that whole sequence is just absolutely legendary.
I've discussed this movie online, and people are like, Garbage Days from a Christmas movie? And I'm like, yeah, kinda.
Yeah, a little?
Little, kinda.
Sure. It's from a movie.
But people know that without knowing the movie, is what I mean. Yes. But if you know the movie, you definitely know that scene.
Yeah. Like, people might know Mac and Me from all of the the Paul Rudd, Conan O'Brien, but have never be like, what the fuck is...
Yeah.
Oh, this is that movie. Mac and Me, also a pretty great fucking
pretty
episode.
Pretty good episode.
That we reviewed live at Sac City Brews.
Yeah.
Back in the old days. In the before times. And before we got into the now. So we're taking Garbage Day.
Okay.
We're taking that sequence out. Now what? What is the thing that sticks out from this movie? What is the scene? What's the sequence? What's the performance? Oh, well, we talked about the performance. What's the thing that you associate with this movie?
Okay, it's my second favorite performance in the movie.
Oh.
Behind Eric Freeman. It's in the quote-unquote movie theater where he takes his girl on a date to watch a movie. It's by someone being an obnoxious theater goer in the back row. And again, quote-unquote row, because this is supposed to be a movie theater, but they filmed it in like an empty office space. And he goes back and murders some guy. But the guy, you want to talk about go for it?
Oh, boy.
This performance is just so good to be the obnoxious theater patron.
Yeah. He put the go in the go for
it. Yeah.
You read my mind.
Okay.
I was going to mention the movie theater sequence, which comes right before the Garbage Day rampage, right? This is, I guess, the instigator for it. I mean, if we're trying to apply some sort of a logic to this thing, that whole sequence is, it's bonkers. It's absolutely bonkers. And then, of course, as a film critic and somebody who loves movies and about watching movies and watching other people and obsession and all that other kind of shit. This is an like unheralded entry in that genre, right? Like,
yeah.
Okay. Like the Fablemans, the Schmablemans. This is like fucking Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2, man. Okay. It is just such a crazy sequence. I just remember like the whole movie just being like, what in the what? And then this sequence comes.
It's where you start like laughing at it.
Right. And then that leads right into the whole garbage, the murdering, electrocuting someone with jumper cables and strangling his girlfriend with a car wire and then just running around on a rampage, just killing everybody in the neighborhood. And finally yelling Garbage Day at someone who's carrying out the garbage and wasting it. And I mean, it's fucking amazing. That movie theater sequence.
The movie theater sequence is also filmed like an SNL sketch, really.
It really,
if you think about it. But also, they're watching a trailer for a movie that's pretty much talking about the movie he's in.
Yes.
And this is where it's almost like, it's kind of Hiltzik. It's like, is it fucking with us?
Like, what?
Like, do they know what they're doing?
Like, what? Is this some Charlie Kaufman shit going on right now? What the fuck are you doing, boy? Oh, boy. Yeah, it is. It's a heck of a ride. It's a heck of a ride. And I'm glad that everyone seems to like our review of it.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite episodes. I'm glad it's one of your favorite episodes, too. So sit back, relax, recline. If you have the ability to recline, take off your shoes and socks. Just get comfy. Really nestle in there and enjoy this command performance of Silent Night, Deadly Night, Part 2.
And now, our feature presentation.
The IMDb synopsis for this movie is... The now adult Ricky talks to a psychiatrist about how he became a murderer after his brother, Billy, died, leads back to Mother Superior. This presumes you know a lot about this family's history.
I know. And it's funny because the movie assumes that you know absolutely nothing to the point that it will include most of the first film.
This movie is like a 1.5 as opposed to a 2 because it just shows you the first movie. Okay, so let me get into why I wanted to do this movie. So I was not a horror movie fan as a kid. I didn't really watch them, but I had a neighbor named Marty, and Marty had a house which was one of like those second homes. You were at that house so much when you were growing up. Marty had a bigger family than I did, and it was the first time I had to learn about like sharing watching schedules. Like we all didn't get their own TV, so you had to watch what somebody else wanted to watch. So he wanted to watch Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2. I watched it, and even as a kid, I was like judgmental and, and pretty shitty about stuff. I could not have been any older than 11, but I was like, this is the first movie. I know this. That's not this movie. Yeah. They're just showing frames of this. And this actor, I can't physically watch this man perform his craft.
It's something else.
It's amazing. There's no performance like it in history.
Yeah.
So that movie has stuck with me all these years as being one of the worst movies I've ever seen. And yet, one of the first times I actually was like, I like talking about this movie because it's so bad.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before social media, before memes became a thing, I talked to people and all you had to say was garbage day. And people knew if they were in the know, it was like a celebration. High five, shirts come off, we're lighting fireworks, you know, doing cartwheels. It was amazing.
Classic Rancho. Yeah, so Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2 from 1987. That is our movie today. But we're going to start, as the film does, with Silent Night, Deadly Night, released in November 1984. That film, which a lot of people don't remember, it was a very notorious movie upon release. It's what I would call a powder keg of controversy.
Sure.
I'm going to go ahead and just TM that.
Powder keg of
controversy. Yeah. It inspired protests from PTA, the PTA, and from parents groups. Outrage, condemnation from film critics. It was a kind of a small scale hit in its first week of release, but it actually got pulled from theaters because of the controversy.
But all that did was thus ensured people went to see this and gave us several sequels to this movie. That's all those people did.
It was actually re-edited and re-released with a different advertising campaign in 1985 that focused on the controversy.
There you
and
go.
Not on images of Santa and more about like, here's this controversial.
Here's crazy women with
their
kids.
They don't want you to see us. There are actually 4 sequels to Silent Night, Deadly Night, and there was also a loose remake called Silent Night released in 2012. However, the film we are talking about today, Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2, different director than the first film. Directing credit here goes to Lee Harry and Joseph H. Earl. These were editor partners who were actually asked to take the original film and recut it into a new movie. But nobody backs Lee Harry into a creative corner. He fought for his vision and got, I don't know, 60% of it on the screen. 25 to 30 minutes of Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2 is footage from Silent Night, Deadly Night.
It's bananas.
With narration over it to explain it. I mean, it's like flashbacks, but it's a half hour of flashbacks in a 40-minute span. Most of Lee Harry's work is as an editor of movie trailers, which is strangely appropriate because they're just taking existing footage and cutting it in a new sort of way than putting a narration over it. That's about all it is. Film was released on June 1st, 1987. It earned $154,000 at the box office against a budget of $100,000. There was just Silent Night, Deadly Night fatigue at that point.
It was just too
prevalent in the culture.
We had Santa as a killer enough by then.
Film has a 0 on Rotten Tomatoes, only 6 reviews.
What?
Corky.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Corky. The comparisons, I think, between this film, Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2, and a film that we reviewed for Scare Daniel last year, which is Sleepaway Camp.
Sure.
I think there's a lot of parallels there. They were both discarded in their day but resurrected by a new generation that appreciated them as comedies, whether that was intentional or not. Did this one entertain and impress you as much as Sleepaway Camp did?
Oh, absolutely, and worthwhile to talk about.
And kind of does blur that line between what is good and what is bad. Is this good? Is this bad? I mean, because it's awful, but man, it's really good.
Am I enjoying it because I'm just enjoying its awfulness?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I think there's some amazing moments here. It's not quite it doesn't have quite the same level, for lack of a better word, of artistry as Sleepaway Camp did. And it does fall into what I think are some conventional slasher tropes, where Sleepaway Camp kind of takes that and just blows it all up in your face.
It's a great point.
At the same time, it's way more fun than almost anything we've ever done. It's infinitely more accomplished and competent a piece of filmmaking than An American Werewolf in Paris.
Exactly.
Which was made for $30 million. This was made for $100,000 or whatever it was. I mean, give me a break. So, yeah, the first half is just absolutely insane. After a while, I realized, holy shit, like, this is just the movie, right? Yes. Like, it really is like one of those flashback episodes from Family Ties where they're like, remember the time that Santa raped mommy?
They all get locked in the freezer, or they're locked in the basement and they're looking through old photos and shit. Oh, this is mom dead on the highway.
The time Billy committed a bunch of stabbings. So it's kind of amazing. Like, we're actually reviewing both movies.
Pretty much.
Which kind of nicely stretches out your entertainment dollar. I'm sure it would be annoying if I had actually seen Sleepaway Camp and liked it, maybe. Yeah. But it seems like that's a distinct.
The other thing that really worked against Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2 is that in using Silent Night, Deadly Night, the original, it shows you how much of a superior movie that is.
Yes.
The acting is better. The direction is better.
There seems to be some kind of point of view to it.
Yeah. There's actually like a fleshed out story and thought process of it. Not this movie.
No.
They're just like, here, remember this good movie? We're going to tack some shit onto that.
Not so much. So speaking of blurring the lines between great and terrible, we should just talk for a moment about Eric Freeland.
Freeman. No, it's Freeman.
I think it's Freeland. As Ricky. Everything he does is so over the top. It's so unnatural. And yet it's like strangely effective. You know what I mean? Because like, he really does seem insane.
Here's the thing.
He has these dark, dead eyes.
Yes.
He has a lantern jaw. He has a rectangle head. He has eyebrows that do not stop moving up and down. I tried to replicate that of talking and moving your eyebrows. I physically cannot do that. I don't know if that's an acting choice on his part. I don't know what the fuck it is. It's kind of insane, but it's kind of great at the same time because you can't imagine anyone else doing it. So to me, it recalled Tommy Wiseau from The Ring. It's inimitable.
It's one of those performances. I left it out of my – you asked me to explain why I wanted to dare this movie. I left it out, but the thing that made me not be able to watch this as a kid was his eyebrows.
Yes. Oh, my God.
At minute 4 in this movie begins the eyebrow dance.
Yes.
They do not stop. No. They move independent of each other. It's like a ventriloquist dummy's eyebrows where one can go up and sideways. And they don't move like normal times when you think somebody would move their eyebrows, right? They move all the time at anything.
Yeah, he has no reaction to shocking things. Yeah. Than like a wild eyebrow seizure to things that just seem very normal.
He's whispering and his eyebrows are bouncing like Simone Biles. It's crazy.
Physically impossible. All right, let's get into the movie.
All right.
We start with the usual ominous horror movie music. We got blood red credits. And we said at the beginning that, you know, they had to kind of stretch this movie to like get it to feature length. It's like 88 minutes right now.
Yes.
Like we said, a half hour of that is reused footage, okay? But they still had to stretch it. They still had to get enough movie in there to get it to feature length. A lot of the stretching happens during the opening credits. There is 6 minutes of setting up a microphone.
That's true.
We have like 4 microphones here. It took Johnny like 2 minutes. It takes 6 minutes. I'm like, what the fuck is happening?
You get a real-time setup. Is this
like
a Lav
Diaz movie? Or like a pitch-a-pong beer Sethical direct this 1980s slasher movie? All right.
You get the credits that say Silent Night, Deadly Night, Part 2. Interesting trivia, the original title, working title, was Silent Night, Deadly Night 2.
I love it. Do you know what the original working title of Silent Night, Deadly Night was?
Santa Slay?
Slay Ride.
Ah, I was close!
Right.
But I like how they flipped the script and went part two instead of just two.
Right.
It really lets you know what you're working with.
It's like, this is part two in a saga.
It's saying, this is part of a movie.
So there's this microphone being set up. We see this man in a mental institution. That's Ricky.
I guarantee you his name is Ricky because he could not learn a different name from Eric.
They're setting up this reel-to-reel recording machine, and this man in a suit comes in to interview Ricky. He tells the orderly, who seems kind of scared of Ricky, to get out, you know, get out. This guy we find out is Dr. Bloom, the man in the suit. He tells Ricky, I'm your last chance. Ricky, he's a little argumentative, though. Would you say he's uncooperative, Quirky?
I would say he's disinterested and hostile.
Hostile.
To the doc.
And yelling at strange times.
These are all very close close-ups on people's faces. You can see Cassiopeia and Orion in his pores.
So Ricky calls this guy a pencil neck piece of shit. And maybe you think people don't use pencil neck as an insult anymore.
Not since Classy Freddy Blassie.
Is it not an insult for someone to have a very skinny neck?
It is. That I could snap like a number two? Pencil neck. Piece of shit.
You pencil neck piece of shit.
It's also, we should know that this is December 24th, if this is all happening.
They say date December 24th. There's all this kind of quasi-hardboiled dialogue. Like, the doctor wants to interview Ricky, and Ricky tells him, it's your dime, Doc. Yeah, there's just a lot of stuff. He asks, who killed your parents?
That's Dashiell Hammett, man. That's fucking beautiful.
So the doc asks, who killed your parents? Finally comes around to that, and he says, Santa Claus. And this starts the quote-unquote flashbacks, which are just scenes lifted wholesale from 1984's Silent Night, Deadly Night. So we see the scene, if you've seen the original film, where essentially his parents are driving home. Billy is Ricky's older brother. Ricky is a baby here.
I mean, not like a little more than baby. 6 months.
Yes. And yet he has memories. Yes. Memories of this later, like, drive him insane.
Hold on. Ricky's memories of the first movie do not matter if he's a baby or if he's even at the scene.
Yes.
Or if anybody who could have told him what happened is at the scene.
Absolutely not.
There's a clip of a cops driving around that are one of Ricky's memories.
Somehow I remember that. But he does say, Billy told me everything. But he later actually has the memories. I mean,
yeah.
You want to think the movie's going for something here, but really it's just, I mean, it's really incompetent.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's a man in a Santa Claus outfit by the road. All the little Billy's excited about Santa Claus. There's a man in a Santa Claus outfit. He stopped by the road. He flags them down. This guy turns out to be a psychopath who, like, shoots the father.
For no reason.
Yeah. Rips the mother out of the car, is about to rape her.
Get the first of many women with their blouses ripped open.
Yes.
That happens repeatedly.
There is a theme of this happening over and over where essentially, like, yes, someone will be trying to attack a woman and they'll be briefly fought off, but then something even much more violent and horrible will happen. So anyway, yes, she fights him off, but then he kills her. And then runs and tries to find Billy, who has run and hid. And then this guy, like, takes off.
Guess. I don't know.
Yeah. So Billy's parents were killed by Santa Claus on
Billy
Christmas
witnessed
Eve.
Witnessed it all.
And Billy saw the whole thing. So now we go back to another flashback. So this is the flashback at the orphanage. Now Billy is, like, a little bit older. He's at the orphanage. He has this Santa Claus death obsession.
Yeah.
There's two nuns. There's the bad nun. That's Mother Superior.
Mother Superior.
And there's the good nun, which is Sister Mary. Again, Ricky is remembering all of Billy's memories from it. This is all Billy. Nothing happens to Ricky.
There's
in the
no
first
Ricky in the no, first like, Ricky. In the memories.
Yeah. But essentially, Billy has your classic sex equals death origin story, which is like he sees some people having sex in the orphanage. Mother Superior breaks it up and punishes Billy and punishes the people and says that sex is wrong. And this creates a very obvious link of sex equals bad equals shame equals punish.
Which I actually thought was pretty good for an origin story, even if it's trashily done and it's gratuitous. It's really showed you why this guy ties sex and violence together and Santa Claus, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And he finally gets it into his head. Through Mother Superior, quote, punishment is good.
Yes.
So Mother Superior, like, spanks Billy. She's a very voracious discipliner. And Ricky says she was naughty.
But Ricky is reenacting Billy's spanking for the doctor. Yes. It's ridiculous. He was not there. He didn't know anything about this. But each thrust that Mother Superior is giving Billy.
Yes.
She was naughty.
And the doc asks Ricky about if he dreams.
Please give me the line, do you dream, Ricky?
Edward, do you dream, Ricky?
I don't sleep.
Yes.
Every line is with that cadence and delivery.
But Billy relives it in his dream. So let's go back to Silent Night, Deadly
Sure, we'll
Night.
Just cut right just back
pop
again.
Pop right back in there. Just a little narration on the audio to paste it over. Seamless. Yeah, Billy is reliving the murders in his dream. Mother Superior tries to get him to sit on the lap of Orphanage Santa. He clubber langs the fuck out
He's
of Orphanage
He's got a left
Santa.
Cross.
He does not want to be near Santa Claus.
That kid
He also
threw
drew
it.
A drawing in class where he... not only kills Santa Claus, but actually beheads a reindeer. Like,
Blitzen
what did the reindeer?
Blitzen's an innocent.
What did they do?
Didn't do nothing.
It's a goddamn animal. That's maybe a red flag more than the Santa stuff. I'm like, am I crazy? Santa killed his parents.
Right.
Reindeer didn't do shit. What is a reindeer there?
At this time, we cut back to the interviewee, the doc. His tape runs out, and Ricky's disdain for this doc's tape running out is just palpable. He is not going to be tolerant of your tape running out. Doc has to switch the reel to reel, and Ricky proceeds to go back to the first movie again.
Back to the first movie. So Billy's now 18, gets a job at a toy store. Thank you, Mother Superior, and her sadism. I mean, she just keeps forcing him to be like with the toys and Santa.
He goes to work at Ira's Toys, which is shot at this place where the storefront is all painted with this really terrible Christmas scene, just so they didn't have to show you that it was an abandoned store.
So yeah, he gets this job at a toy store where he is forced to dress up as Santa Claus for Halloween. And there's this kind of amazing scene where this girl is on his lap and he's like, stop fighting.
That was really kind of terrifying.
You're going to be you're being naughty. And all the parents are like, oh, he's so good with the kids. And the kid is like frightened.
These kids are horrified.
Santa just told them they're going to die.
But you say he's forced to wear the Santa outfit. I got to say, later on at the Christmas party.
He's still wearing it. He's still wearing it. You know, I mean, I'm sure he was like acting like, oh, man, I got to be Santa. But he was still wearing
he
it.
He really has.
A lot of opportunities changed.
He probably wears it under his work uniform.
So it's at the party that night, the Christmas party for the employees, that the classic slasher sex punishment murders start. So there's two employees. They go into the back, boy and a girl, and they're having a makeout session.
But hold on. Yeah, this is amazing because this is so cheaply done that it just kind of – there's a paper printout that says stock room, right? Employees only. The guy talks the girl into going back there. Billy follows them, and he comes through the door. This is a darkened warehouse at a toy factory or a toy store. There's Christmas lights just above the door and they string off to nowhere. Like somebody was like, let's get festive in here.
We just put one small
string. But we got one small string of 10 lights.
Put it in a weird angle.
Half the door will be covered.
So they go back there. They start making out, but then the man, she starts resisting, and the man like basically turns into an attempted rape. She fights him off a little bit, but then Billy comes in from behind, grabs the guy, and strangles him to death with Christmas lights.
Yeah, because it's the same move that he saw Santa do to his mom, rip exactly. The blouse, be on top.
Yeah, so that drives him absolutely insane. He strangles him, but then the girl starts freaking out. Is like, what the fuck did you do? Kills her, too.
Yeah.
And then just starts a killing spree throughout the entire store. He kills the owner. He kills the other woman who works in the cashier. He's just stalking people throughout the store.
Her death is pretty funny. The other woman who's at the store, after he comes out of the back, he's wandering through. They're playing a little cat and mouse. She just jumps out behind a wall of boxes. There's no way she could have walled herself in behind those boxes to do the dipsy doodle on the hat box.
And then she runs to the door with an axe and is going to break it with an axe.
Yeah.
But he shoots her with an arrow.
Bow and arrows her.
So Ricky continues that Billy, quote, punished the bad one. So we get more sex equals death scene.
Yeah, the movie's
There's
gone.
Another man and a woman making out. They're
it's gone 3 minutes
heavy.
Without boobs. Yes, so right. The movie's like, nope. Throw
so
another boob shot.
Here comes some boobs. She gets out of bed because she hears her cat.
No, it's not bed, Daniel. They're about to fuck on a pool table. Like no human no ever. You want to know how many STDs you would get from fucking on a pool table? Pool tables get STDs without anybody doing any sexual activity on them. People just embed them in there. She gets up, puts on her Daisy Dukes. She doesn't put a top on and goes out in the snow to let her cat
in. Certainly not. Yes. Let the cat in. But it's not a cat. It's Billy. It's Santa. And he picks her up and impales her on deer antlers.
How did he know they were being naughty inside?
Sex equals naughty.
I guess.
Yeah. He's just come to believe.
But know, anybody was doing any, they could have been eating, you know, Stouffer's and he would have killed them. Naughty.
So we just keep dipping back from the asylum. We'll go there for like 30 seconds. And then again, it's just like a flashback episode. And then we'll pop back to another scene. So we see a dad in a Santa suit almost gets shot by cops.
How does Ricky know this scene? How does Ricky have this memory?
How does he have this memory? Maybe this happened, Doc. Billy,
I'm going to tell you three truths and a lie, Doc. You got to pick which one. It's an improv game.
Billy decapitates a sled-stealing bully with an axe.
Hey, this reminded me, again, of Sleepaway Camp, where we had the almost real-time softball game. Mm-hmm. This was just a 3-minute sledding scene for a while. Yeah. Jaunty music. They had some bullies stealing a sled. It was a sled jacking that went on.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Ricky tells the doctor, we go back to the orphanage, that I could squash you like a bug. So there's that.
He also says, maybe we're just jerking off here. Yes. The doctor, his retort is, if you say so. And then Ricky goes back, you're good, Doc, but I know all the moves. This isn't dialogue.
Everything he says is so fucking random.
Yeah, it's so random. It's just hilarious. Words said to people. It's not dialogue. It's not a real conversation.
Like, insert this here.
Yeah.
Does he sell it? Does he sell it? So Billy's going to go to the orphanage for revenge. We're dipping back into Silent Night, Deadly Night. We're still doing that. But yeah. Barney Fife, the cop, comes in and just shoots the wrong guy. He shoots the deaf pastor who is dressed up as Santa Claus for the children. He's coming in. All the children see him. Whammo, 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 whammo. In the back, kills this deaf pastor.
In front of a playground full of children. And he is mildly apologetic.
More annoyed
that you would bring it up.
Like, really? Really? He's just hanging around. That's, I was like, you just shot the pastor of the church. Now you're inside the church going like, hey, everybody, calm down. I'll keep you safe.
He's inside the church. He almost goes like, I'm sorry if you're offended by that. Like,
yeah. I'm out there on the front lines every day. So he's just going to hang out for their safety. He goes outside. Almost immediately gets killed.
Yeah, but we see a montage of him pointing his gun willy-nilly as he enters and goes into every room. This guy just shot an innocent man.
Yes.
Dead.
But Billy gets him, and a child, the doors are all locked, but the child sees Santa at the door and lets in Billy. Billy goes to Mother Superior and says, naughty, prepares to axe her, pulls up the axe real big over his head. Finally, a competent policeman walks in and just shoots him in the back.
Was that guy even a policeman?
I mean,
we don't know. We're only seeing.
He just wait until the axe is over his head. Like, you didn't need to just shoot. Like, the deaf pastor was just walking to give a kid a handshake. It's like, hey, kid, put it there, buddy.
The cop's like, I wanted this to be at the most dramatic moment in front of this room full of children.
This music says, now. So Billy goes down. He's dead. He looks at the children and says, you're safe now. Santa Claus is gone. Then Ricky, child Ricky. It's like the first time we've seen child Ricky since he was a baby.
Right.
He's not in any of the other flashback scenes. He says the last line of Silent Night, Deadly Night, which is naughty.
Right.
And he says it to Mother Superior. That's the end of Silent Night, Deadly Night. That's the end of
the flashbacks.
For the most part, it actually comes back again later.
That's true.
But we do go back to the asylum. At this point, I realize that, like, it's like, what, 15, 20 years after the events of the first movie?
Right?
Like, this is the thing. So it starts with Ricky as a baby.
Yeah.
Ends with Ricky as like a full-grown adult.
28?
That's what I think. I mean, they say 18 at one point, but then it's obviously, I mean, whatever. He's in his 20s, let's just say, right? So at least 20 years have passed. Maybe 25 years have passed with literally no differences in fashion or technology.
Cars,
nothing has changed. No differences. What time is any of this happening? Now.
Yeah, right? It's all now, man.
It's just happening, man. It's just a weird happening, man. Yeah, but it was like, it's like 20 years after the events of this movie, and it's like, you're still using a reel-to-reel tape recorder to record this conversation? Those were old school in 1987. When the fuck is this movie?
He gets adopted by Mother Superior out to a couple named the Rosenbergs.
Yeah, so this is Ricky now starts flashing back to his own story. This is new footage.
Shot with a home video.
Very poorly. But yeah, this is all new stuff now, but it's still going to narrate.
Home videos?
Yes. Who's shooting it? Yes. Professional videographer hired to do it quite poorly.
To capture them driving around.
He's 12 years old. He's out with Mama Rosenberg, and he gets very troubled by the sight of nuns walking towards him and has all these memories of the murders, of Billy getting murdered, and he's very troubled at school and everything else. But we see his family doesn't give up on him, this adoptive family. They decide they love him and they're not going to give up on him. They actually really do, yeah. And he's able to kind of suppress it for a while.
The other thing that I noticed, you say, like the time difference – the mom's shoulder pads in her dress are straight 19. It's like Brian Bosworth. Yes. It's crazy. Christian Okoye had smaller shoulder pads. So Ricky's no older than, I want you to remember this, Ricky's no older than 15 or 16 at this time. The actor playing Ricky has a 5 o'clock shadow.
Yes. And it's not Ricky. It's not the adult Ricky yet.
No.
This is a different Ricky. There's like three other Rickys.
It's a grown man playing a 15-year-old kid with frosted tips and a 5 o'clock shadow.
But yeah, Papa Rosenberg dies.
Yeah, Morty Rosenberg, R.I.P.
Morty Rosenberg, he's donezo. He's worm food. So it comes out, the repression, it ends. So Ricky starts murdering people. And he tells the doc, I've never told anybody this before. And the doc says, let it out. And Ricky says, here it comes.
His eyebrows did like anaphylactic shock in that delivery. They almost bounce off his head. I'm just going to say it.
It's amazing. So Ricky is out just wandering around after the funeral. He's just wandering around in nature.
Yeah.
And comes across another scene where it's a man and a woman making out. And they're making out. They're into it. But then the man goes too far. She resists. And it suddenly turns into an attempted rape.
Same thing. Man on top rips the blouse open.
And Ricky has these memories of a murder that happened when he was a baby. Like, the ones that happened when he was like 8 years old, I guess I can see that.
He flashes back to a murder that he was a baby for. But I got to say, they were the couple that's out there picnicking, they're drinking Tecate. And then before the guy starts, Tecate could not have been happy with that product placement.
Yes. Yeah, so Ricky now has gone crazy. Because again, he has all these triggers, and now he's gone insane. So this guy goes to his Jeep to massage his sore testicles and to get a beer.
Yep.
Ricky's in the car. He's in the Jeep. And boom, kabam, runs him down.
Runs him
back.
But then
back forth. And the girl sees this. She just sees the car going back and forth. And sees Ricky leaving and thanks him.
Yep.
Unlike some of the other women who attack Billy or attack Ricky later.
Right.
She's like, I'm cool with it. And Ricky's like, oh, all right.
Yeah, he takes off. The cuts back.
Doctor's notes.
Yes.
Red car, exclamation point. So the doctor looks up. It's like, what? Point of view shot. Ricky's not there. Ricky pops in from the side frame and says, going too fast for you, doc? Looks at his notes. Red car? Good point.
Is the movie owning its shittiness at that point?
Yeah, it's so fucking amazing. He looks up and is like, where is he? You're in a small room together. Look to the left. I think that's where he is.
The doctor has no peripheral vision. That's his backstory. Like, you didn't know that.
Huh? What? Red car? Oh, but Ricky.
But why did he write red car? Like, what is the point of that?
Because later on, another red car. Remember the red car?
Oh, in the garbage day scene?
Chip's car.
Oh, Chip's car. Yeah. I thought that. Okay, shit. No, I didn't remember that.
Right. Yeah. A little spoiler for y'all. So, more recapping now. Ricky's now played by Ricky, played by Eric
Freeman.
Last name redacted. And like Billy, he's got another dead end job. He's a young man, but he's working some shitty job. He's working. Taking out the garbage at some restaurant.
At the Shea Ritz. He says the Shea Ritz.
He hears a noise that, quote, sounded like some squirrel getting his nuts squeezed, end quote. So he sees this loan shark, this gangster. So he's just shaking some bum down and it's like, you owe me money, but I hope you don't pay because I like beating you up. And he just beats him up.
You know this guy's a gangster because his name is Rocco.
His name's Rocco. He's wearing a trench coat as well. As Rocco is leaving, he kind of bumps into Ricky and tries to get tough with him. Ricky apparently has super strength. This was not set up, but he has super strength because this guy punches him. The blows just glance off. He feels nothing. Ricky picks the guy up.
Yeah.
Just picks him up over his head, grabs an umbrella, which is nearby. It starts raining. And Ricky stabs him with an umbrella.
Yeah. Puts an umbrella through him.
But the coup de grace. Open the umbrella, which is covered in viscera.
Ricky's wearing a white shirt with a white apron. Not a drop of blood or guts is on him.
But yeah, this guy gets killed with an umbrella going straight through his entire body. And then there's this long shot, about 2 minutes long, of the camera just slowly dollying in on this viscera-covered umbrella as rain comes down.
Rain 5 feet in front of the camera starts pouring. There's no rain behind that.
It just looks like a single hose.
Yeah, somebody just held like, a hose
I got
a
garden hose. Wait, if I put my thumb over the thing, there you go.
But you're right. That's 2 minutes of that shot.
It really is, yeah. So now we go back to the asylum, and the doctor is like, holy shit. He did not know about these murders. That's not why Ricky's here. Not for killing some dude out in the middle of a field, not for stabbing a gangster with an umbrella and then opening it and spreading his guts all over the umbrella. No, he's in there for something else. And Ricky says, you're getting real close. So the doctor says, tell me about Jennifer. And Ricky says, eat shit. But he does admit Jennifer, the only thing he ever cared about. So we get the soft, tender flashback.
And the doc throws out a picture, which is an obvious headshot from this actress.
Can we get a photo of her?
Nope. I love when movies do this. I love when movies use obvious headshots.
Yeah. Jennifer is the only thing Ricky cares about. So they have their meet cute when she basically runs him down in a parking lot.
Almost runs him over?
Yes.
And then gets out and giggles about it?
He does. And he's charmed by it. Yeah. It's a reverse cool as ice.
Yeah.
Basically, right? It is. Like, it's some kind of a vehicular incident, but it's kind of sweet.
Yeah, it is.
But this time she's the psychopath because she is like backing out on his motorcycle. She just goes in to take his parking lot, and you're like, you're driving forward. There's no obstructions.
No,
you can
yeah.
see there is a man there, right? Like, she does that on purpose. She is a psychopath.
Then there's a little montage of them dating, and I love the symbolism of them driving into a tunnel. And then cut to them in the bedroom.
Yes.
It's like, yeah, I know what tunnel means.
Sexing.
It's a very tasteful side boob and butt shot.
I was tasteful.
It wasn't in her contract to do full nudity at that
time.
Too
tasteful for my taste.
In this movie, yeah.
Yeah.
Full bodies pressed up against each other.
Yes. And it's his first time, and he thought it was hers, too. Uh-oh. So now we get back-to-back, I would say, the two great sequences in this film.
Yes.
And they happen just back to back. This movie for about 10 or 15 minutes becomes the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my fucking life.
You would think they were trying to do a parody of this.
Yes.
You know what I mean? But by how they play this.
So we go to a movie theater.
Is it a movie theater, Daniel?
It looked pretty authentic to me. Did not look like someone just put some chairs against the wall.
It has those things on the wall like your classroom had in elementary school with all the little holes in the different tiles.
Oh, my God.
It's a very well-lit movie theater, yes. So you can see everybody's face while they're watching a movie.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Not dark at all.
Not dark, no.
The ceiling is at 8 feet.
Sure. Get a good like sound that way.
Yes.
A real good sound. So, yes, Jennifer and Ricky are at the movies. They're watching a trailer for a movie called Chaos. Chaos the movie, which just is like nonstop violence. And Ricky is watching it, and he's like super into it.
Super into
it. She's like, what is your whole deal? There's a real shithead in the back row of the theater.
Best performance in the movie.
Holy crap. So this guy is just like yelling things out. Right?
Yeah.
Like he's just yelling things out. He has like a friend with him who looks very like embarrassed.
Right?
He's like slumping in his seat. But like they're complete opposites. Like this guy is really tiny with the embarrassed guy is tiny with a mustache.
Yeah.
The asshole is like seems like a giant.
Yeah.
With like a big head and frizzy hair. And he's very wild and very loud.
Loud, boisterous.
He's like throwing popcorn on the guy. He's like, can't even describe how amazing this performance is. But yes, he is an asshole. But it's at this moment that Jennifer just starts telling Ricky how much she likes him. Like, the movie has started, right? Like,
yeah.
This guy's not the only person who is yelling things in the middle of the theater, right? Like, she starts going into like their relationship and all those kind of things. Ricky's like, what is this movie about? Again, the movie has already started, and he's asking what the fucking movie is about. What is the movie about, Quirky? It's about a killer Santa on the loose. This blew my fucking mind. This blew my fucking mind. I was like, are we going to Charlie Kaufman this bitch up in here? Is this a movie within a movie within my head? What the fuck is going on? No. It's just another way to shoehorn in 90 seconds of footage from Silent Night, Deadly Night.
That's exactly what it is.
So they just show earlier scenes of the crazy Santa who kills Billy's parents, robbing people and doing shit like that. But that's the fucking movie. The movie they're watching is Silent Night, Deadly Night. It just fucking, that was amazing. Ricky actually does freak out a little and runs.
He takes off.
Yes. And that's Chip's time to shine.
So we see a shot of Jennifer sitting there now alone watching this movie. And like always happens in a movie theater when you want to see somebody and talk to them, somebody you recognize, he pops up from behind
covers her eyes.
And she is casually disinterested to find out Chip,
Yes. So Chip is just the asshole.
Yeah.
He's the asshole of the area. He's the rich kid. He's the snob. We come to find out they've had sex. Chip took Jennifer's virginity.
How do you know that, though? Because he reminds her of it, that he'll tell people.
Right away, yes. It just comes right up. He's like a bleach blonde. He's a real piece of shit. I mean, this guy is overacting on all the same levels that that Eric, last name redacted, is hitting. Meanwhile, Ricky goes in the back and murders the obnoxious moviegoer in this amazing scene where he's like leans over and the camera's like his friend, and then it finally leans over and it's Ricky.
Yeah.
And Ricky kills him.
They cut back to a scene where it's just the obnoxious guy's feet and popcorn is flying up. Like when Ricky's murdering him, he's throwing popcorn up or something.
They just glance over and are like, no reaction to that.
That's normal at a movie theater.
Continue their conversation. So yeah, they keep going on about that. Chip's date pulls him away. And then Ricky just is on the other side of Jennifer right now. And she's like, I want to go, you know, because this creepo was just sidling up beside her in a movie theater. And Ricky says, I'm beginning to like this picture. So very next scene, Chip and Jennifer are just walking down the street.
Yeah.
Planning a romantic getaway.
Yeah.
Let's go out and do something romantic.
We're just going to walk around.
And there's Chip.
Hey,
Chip again.
They somehow suddenly walk by Chip's house.
Right by Chip, who is out front.
In his Letterman sweater.
Yes. With a red car.
Fixing his red car. That's right. I didn't catch that.
His red car has, obviously the battery is dead because he's got his battery chargers out.
Sure.
So Chip, right away, because Chip's an asshole.
Yeah.
Chip's just an asshole.
His name's Chip.
His name's Chip. He's no good. He spills the beans about him and Jennifer. Ricky freaks out. Grabs the battery chargers.
Before this, the way Chip spills the beans about her, he says, maybe we can do something. Maybe we could go on a hayride, you know, where I fucked your brains out.
That's just Chip being Chip. That's
like, that went to like subtle hinting at to just fucking driving it home.
So Ricky goes fucking nuts.
Yeah.
He takes the battery chargers and shoves them in Chip's mouth.
Chip suddenly has sunglasses on for some reason.
So the effect can work.
Yes.
So he's getting electrocuted, turns up the juice, and finally his eye just pops out through the glasses.
Because he put the jumpers on his teeth.
Exactly.
He
put the jumper cables in his mouth. Yeah. So he electrocutes and he just says, punish. And then she goes, uh-oh.
Like, whoopsie.
Like a little cloud of dust to be like,
yikes. Coconuts and stuff, yeah.
But no, he grabs her and pulls out the car's radio antenna and strangles her with it.
Yep.
He kills Jennifer.
R.I.P. Jennifer.
But luckily, literally right there, having made no noise to come up on them, is a security guard with his gun drawn.
And his hat is sideways like Mike Cameron.
His hat's cocked. It's like he's a little cocky, this guy. He's got a little panache. So he comes up and he's like, I'm going to kill you. I know how to use this thing. Hee-haw, hee-haw.
And he walks up And like all good people proficient with firearms do, he puts a firearm directly to his face.
That's right.
Get in physical contact.
Absolutely. Get within arm's reach right away. So obviously, Ricky just whammo, grabs the gun, pops him right in the head, shoots him. Guy's dead. He picks up the gun and just starts this amazing rampage through the neighborhood, maniacally laughing the entire time. Well, like maniacally laughing and then not laughing.
Right. And then very stone-faced killer psycho.
Yes.
You've probably seen, if you're a bad movie aficionado, you've seen this video on YouTube or something like that. And it is the performance of a lifetime.
It's amazing.
He's just walking down the center of the street. The
music, everything is just stunning. Stunning. Yeah, I'll put it up on the show post. On
a guy comes out of his door in a jersey, says, "What's all this goddamn noise?" Ricky just fires across a street with a revolver.
Yes.
Motherfucker.
And he does have the infamous garbage day line where a man is just taking out the garbage. Well, he's not even taking out the garbage. That's a weird thing. The garbage is already out.
Yeah.
He just picks up the garbage and moves it like 3 feet to the curb.
Right.
At which point,
reveal shot.
Ricky shows up and says, "Garbage day."
He shouts, "Garbage day!"
through the trash can.
Now, that stuck with me. That was the thing that stuck with me. Garbage day, because
it's so fucking random. What? It doesn't, like, that comes from
there's
nowhere.
There's no pun. There's nothing to it. That's nothing triggering.
There's a guy taking out the garbage. Garbage day.
Boom.
Yeah.
And then there's dead. A slow motion shot. Yes. This man flies backwards.
Oh, fuck. But no, that's not the end of the rampage. It keeps going. A car is now coming at him. He shoots at the car. Shoots. The car swerves and hits a ramp.
A very conveniently placed construction ramp.
It's disguised as a ramp-shaped mound of dirt. It flies up, lands fine. Kaboom!
Explodes.
It's fucking the fucking Pinto scene from Top Secret all over again. It just fucking explodes into an inferno. Into a goddamn inferno. Just blows the fuck up. But no, Rampage, not over yet. Not over yet. In my notes at one point I wrote, this is still happening.
Yeah.
Like, it just goes. It just goes.
There's a part where a little girl rides his bike into him, and you're supposed to go, but it's like, no, that's okay. Yeah, she's showing cool. She's an innocent. Although, he didn't really care when he shot the drivers of those cars who Kareem could have went anywhere and killed that little girl.
Just popping out of his house? Yeah, he's not. He's sure.
Yeah. Right. Or the car, you shot someone driving a car. They could have hit an innocent.
He walks right in, more maniacal laughing. He's just occasionally just ha ha ha, like just
stone face,
insane,
ha, 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 ha. Stone face.
Walks right into a roadblock. These cops' roadblocks. They're all ready to shoot, and then he turns the gun on himself. And suddenly, these guys are like suicide prevention counselors.
Each cop pops out of their car with the gun drawn on, ready to throw.
We're gonna fucking
throw down.
Kill you, man. We're gonna take you down.
He puts a gun to his head. Don't do it. You're a fool.
You're a fool. You got so much to live for. Don't do it, pal. Like, what?
Like, you were just ready to shoot this man who's murdered several people.
And Ricky is ready to kill himself and end it all, but click.
Didn't count the shots.
Was empty. So we go back to the asylum. The story is over. He's wrapping up a story, but we see that Dr. Bloom has been choked to death.
With what?
The reel-to-reel tapes.
Ricky hates that tape.
Does not like tapes. So we now hear sounds only. I just didn't have the money to film this.
Yeah.
We just hear sounds of Ricky escaping the asylum and people going like, oh my God, he's loose. Ah. So he just leaves. We just hear sounds of mayhem. He's gone. He's taken off. He's out of the asylum. So Sister Mary shows up. Sister Mary from the first one. She's the good nun. She shows up. She's now helping the detectives. They kind of realize, oh shit, he's going after Mother Superior.
Okay.
Mother Superior, Sister Mary says, like, oh, Mother Superior's retired. She's not going to be at the thing, right? She's retired. She's living on her own. She had a stroke. Okay. Billy, again, in a sounds only scene, encounters a Salvation Army Santa.
Ricky
does. Yeah. Ricky encounters a Salvation Army Santa, murders him, steals his suit, makes a phone call. We kind of go up to see the phone call, and he says, Santa's back. And on the other end, it's Mother Superior, who she did not have a stroke. I don't know what the fuck happened to her face, but she did not have a stroke.
She's got like smallpox or something. Like,
she has the bubonic plague.
It's like
her face is utterly malformed and like it has large black
in Braveheart when Robert the Bruce goes to visit his dad and his dad's hidden under those rags. That's what I think it's to hide it's a different actress.
That's going a long way. Well, why did they say she had a stroke?
I don't know.
It's so bizarre. Like, why is her, what is happening with her face?
And they didn't try to hide that Sister Mary was a different actress.
Give a shit about that.
But I love what Mother Superior is watching on TV. Because she turns on this, her small TV and it says, live to the traditional Christmas. This is the traditional midnight Christmas parade from 1965, because it is not a current Christmas parade.
Yes. And she grumbles at the parade, they've made a travesty of the sacraments.
Meanwhile, she lives at a house with 666 as the address.
She lives at 666 Hell House Lane. Way. So Ricky comes right through the door. 666, baby. He's in his Santa gear. He's ready to kill Mother Superior. He's ready to finish Billy's job from the first movie. Do what Billy couldn't do. And kill Mother Superior, a retired nun.
In a wheelchair, a retired nun in a wheelchair with,
like, I think she's done her worst.
Yeah.
So he busts in and says, Mother Superior, I've got a present for you. Chases her around the house, kind of Jack Torrance's through a few more doors. The layout of
this house is baffling.
Right. Like, it's just nonstop doors to break through.
There are shots where he's all the way down a hallway, but then he comes through and it's on a landing of a stair.
And he says, I love a good chase. And then smashes the television. He's about to kill her. She's at the top of the stairs in her wheelchair.
Yeah.
He swipes. A stunt person in a nun outfit falls down the stairs.
Flings himself down the stairs.
He misses, hits the wheelchair, gets stuck, and says, I'm really mad now.
That chair, and so he cannot get that axe back out of that chair. Yeah, this is the only thing that's baffled him. He killed a whole...
He has super strength. He shouldn't even know where she is.
No.
She's retired. There's no way for him to know.
He knew her number.
He knew her number. Knew her address. Knew everything about her.
But he cannot pull that axe out of that wheelchair. And it's because in 1987, all wheelchairs came with axe-proof seating. They don't do this anymore. This is the old school. Because wanton axe murderers were always going after old ladies.
Those were the days. It was the 80s, man. That and Culture Club, 1980s. That's what I think of.
That's true.
So, yeah, he's chasing her around the house. At a certain point, she starts taunting him.
She starts talking shit.
She starts getting into him. She's like, you must be punished. Finally, he comes in behind her, and she tells him, as he's ready to kill her, you are being naughty.
Yeah.
His reply, naughty this, and kills her. Naughty this? What?
I liked when she was talking shit, though, because she was like, Sister Mary, don't start none.
Sister Superior.
That's right.
Get it right.
Was still a you don't want none.
She was definitely in that. But he says naughty this. He whacks down, but the cops and Sister Mary arrive on the scene. Are they too late? Nope. There's Mother Superior. She's right there on the table.
Sister Mary
approaches. Hey, Mother Superior, you okay? Is your plague all right? Is the Black Plague
Mother Superior
okay?
Is just sitting there, staring off in the distance.
And then all of a sudden, blop, head falls off.
Right.
She faints. Ricky pops up.
Where was he?
He was just there. Like, behind her? I don't know. He just pops up. And he has an axe, and he yells the immortal line, boo! Yes!
That's a Halloween thing.
What? That's his line.
He didn't say ho, ho, ho.
Boo! Raises his axe. Cop shoots him. Oh. Coming again. Boom. Shoots him. Raise the axe again. Shoots him. Boom. Through a glass door. Down he goes. We go back to Sister Mary. She wakes up. She's fine. She just fainted. But she sees, wakes up, and what's right next to her? Severed head of Mother Superior. She screams. Ricky smiles. And then the final image of a Santa glove with a knife slashing to the screen.
Right.
Kind of a potent image at the very
I thought that
there.
Was the most frightening image in the whole movie.
It was, right? Because you're just like, oh, well, movie's over. And then all of a sudden, slasheroo.
That was pretty good.
Very great train robbery. Just action for the sake of action, violence for the sake of violence.
The woman with her head cut off, the Mother Superior sitting there with her head cut off, reminded me of the snowman. Because there's no blood. Her head got cut off, somehow cauterized the wound instantly because there's no blood dripping down. It just sits perfectly like her head wasn't cut off. Touches, head goes roll, 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 roll.
I know. But no blood.
No blood. No open blood. Wounds, anything like that.
Yeah. So that's, my friends, is Silent Night, Deadly Night. Part two, by association, Silent Night, Deadly Night, because we basically watched both movies.
Yes, we did.
Corky, final thoughts on this film, 1987, Silent Night, Deadly Night, part two.
If you're a bad movie fan, or if you just like to see a tour de force performance by someone who should not be on screen acting,
right,
you have to see this.
Absolutely.
Eric Freeman takes the cake for a performance that is memorable for all the wrong reasons. Yeah.
But all the right reasons at the same time. Because, again, it's I kind of go back to Tommy Wiseau in The Room. I mean, it's terrible, but it's also like it wouldn't be what it is without that performance.
No, absolutely.
Because it's possessed.
It's what psychotic. I remembered. Yeah.
It's what it's he really does seem insane. Nothing he is saying or doing follows from any sort of a logical place or any kind of place of decision making. Whereas a lot of portrayals of an insane person go into a very sort of a logical sort of a place, and there seems to be a process to everything that's happening in their heads. This is like no fucking process. Nothing. Complete fucking nonsense. So yeah, let's wrap this up and let's give our ratings. Run of the Bill Bad Film, It Gets a Dare, Next Level Bad Movie, Double Dare, and a movie that we actually kind of like, Reverse Dare, Corky. Rating for Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Silent Night, Deadly Night, Part 2. I'm giving you a part double dare. I'm giving you double dare on this movie. But it's one of those emphatic double dares. This is so bad. Watch it and have fun with your friends at how bad it is. It's terribly made. It was shot over 2 days.
Sure.
The scenes of the Ricky and the doctor, the whole movie was shot in 10 days because you only had to make like 3/4 of a movie to make this movie. Just to see a really bugged out performance and laugh at it with your friends. Double dare.
Which is why I'm going with a reverse dare.
Nice.
Way more entertaining than any of the so-called bad movies that we're doing. And just so much more to like chew on too. I mean, and part of that is that, I don't know, Silent Night, Deadly Night seems kind of weirdly interesting, at least in the way that it really actually does try to get in its character's heads. And then part two comes along, which is later in the same movie, and oh my god, it's just so over the top. And I will put the scene, Ricky's Rampage, I will put that scene on daredaniel.com, so go to the post and view that. Even if you don't give a fuck about this movie,
right,
or movies in general, that sequence needs to be seen.
You have to see
you
that.
Have to watch that.
It's like the Paul Rudd, Mac and Me thing.
Right.
Somebody should champion this scene.
Absolutely.
Always show that on your reel.
Yeah, I'm right there. And you know what? This movie, apparently, it did actually somewhat, the fact that it became this kind of sort of bad movie, cult bad movie, kind of resurrected Eric Freeman's acting career. He did start acting again.
Oh no.
Isn't it a wild world we live in?
Have you seen him in anything else?
No. Apparently he was on 2 episodes of In Living Color back in the day.
I'm going home and I'm looking those up.
Go right on IMDb. Now. They tell you what sketches they are too.
Oh, In Living Color?
In Living Color.
I was thinking Living Single.
That would be even better. I'm going with a reverse dare. I think it's
that's awesome.
Entertaining is entertaining. I don't want to give it. Who cares? Intent. What the fuck do I know?
I really like that in our Scare Daniels, we've pulled one at least that one of us gave a reverse dare to.
What did you give a reverse dare to?
Well, Sleepaway Camp.
Oh, Sleepaway Camp. Yeah. As I did too.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, I didn't in the original episode, but in one of our mini episodes, which you guys should go check out and listen to our mini episodes.
Yeah, go back and listen to the mini episodes.
I recalibrated my ratings and gave that a reverse dare.
Cool. So that is a reverse dare and a positive double dare.
Yeah, one of those emphatic double dares.
Silent Night, Deadly Night, part
That's all we have for you on this episode of Scare Daniel, the last in our Scare Daniel series. We're going back to our usual release schedule, so we will be back in 2 weeks to review another one of your movie dares.
Until then, send your most sadistic or altruistic movie dares to us at daredaniel.com, and be sure to follow Dare Daniel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Like and rate us on all of the podcast channels that you listen to. You can read more of my movie reviews on the Dare Daniel website at daredaniel.com. Corky.
Yeah.
Where can people find more of your dirty, dirty, dirty work?
Well, I've got a gig as a terrifying Santa at Ira's Toy Store. in North Wobegon.
And that's just a good gig.
Yeah. And where I just sit there and I stare intently into kids' faces and say, you're being naughty. And the parents just love it. Absolutely. The parents just, they come back for more.
Oh, look at him. He's so good with the kids.
Come down to the Sacramento Comedy Spot. Take classes with the C-Shows. Have some fun.
Sounds fantastic. For Dare Daniel, I'm Daniel Barnes. Our producer is Johnny Chris Kringle Flores.
And I'm Corky McDonald saying, come on, I got it, right?
Hit it.
Garbage day!